Hi, this is Steve.
And this is Carrie.
Welcome to Navigating Life as We Know It. There's an old saying, what you don't know can't hurt you. I assume that was thought up by a guilty party that didn't want to fess up to some dastardly deed. I don't recall ever using that line on you, have I?
No, I don't believe you ever have.
I don't walk with a limp,
no
so
No walking
that,
with a limp.
Yeah. In fact, what you don't know can do a lot of damage and be very costly, especially regarding income taxes. Our episode today is an interview with Tom Kajorski, the executive director of the Arc of Oakland County, Michigan, and the author of the Arc of Michigan 2021 Tax Guide. We will have a link on our website and Facebook page for this guide because you're going to want to have your own copy.
And you'll know why after you listen to this episode. It costs nothing, but it can save you plenty. Before we move on to the episode, we just want to remind you there are three ways that you can support the work that we do with this podcast. The first way is to tell people about NLAWKEY and share this episode. Just send them the link. Number two, subscribe through Google, Apple, Spotify, or any other major podcast service. That way, you'll be notified every time a new episode is released. And the third is consider making a financial donation to support our work. Even a few dollars a month would be greatly appreciated. Alex, our producer, will tell you how to do this a little later on in the program.
Now let's move on to our interview with Tom Kajorski. Today we are talking with Tom Kajorski, the executive director of the Arc of Oakland County. And if you're not from Michigan, that's just north and west of Detroit. It includes part of Detroit and a lot of suburbs, doesn't it, Tom?
Yes, it does.
Okay, and
28
I think,
different school districts, too.
And about, 1.2 million people, something like that?
Give or take, yes.
Pretty good piece of real estate. Well, I want to thank you for being with us today. We are talking about the tax guide that the ARC puts out, and you actually write, for people with disabilities. That offers some tips and things that many of us didn't know and really should know. I want to give a little introduction and by way of biography. You've been doing this as the executive director for like 28, 29 years at the Arc of Oakland County?
That is correct.
Okay. And also serving as the staff attorney. And you've authored 28 issues of the Arc of Michigan's annual income tax guide. And fourth edition of the Planning a More Secure Future, which is a booklet on wills, trust, estate planning, and governmental financial benefits, stuff that is really necessary to know more about, along with instructions on guardianship and alternatives. You also have three brothers with intellectual impairment, so you've kind of lived the life, which really is helpful for those of us who are in the trenches that know that the expert we're dealing with kind of understands the situation we live with. You're a Vietnam veteran. Thank you for your service. And I was interested to see that you retired at the rank of Rear Admiral from the U.S. Navy Reserve after 38 years of service.
That is correct. 10 years ago. It's been that long.
And my son just retired. I can't believe this. I have a retired son from the Navy. He was a submariner, actually worked on the reactors. So there's places on the boat he could not show me. Just proud of him and really thankful for your service, too. And also,
I do know that you're telling the truth because you said submariner,
yes,
and not submariner.
You're
you
right.
Submariner to one of those submarine guys, they'll call you on it.
Well, he also explained to me, my son Eric, he said there's only two types of ships. There's subs and targets. And I guess from their limited point of view, that's probably right. Also, you've run 7 full marathons in Chicago and 4 consecutive half marathons in Oakland County to raise over $150,000 for the ARC. That's phenomenal. I'm not a runner, and I've always kind of had this amazement for people that do that. I know that you have those endorphins running and it becomes enjoyable, they tell me, but to me it looks like sheer pain. But you're running for good cause.
At the time, you know, it was something I had to do to keep my weight down and stay in the Navy, and I haven't done a whole lot of that since, but mentally I just got tired of running, so I don't do that anymore.
Well, it's a nice thing to have on your resume, and you did it to keep your weight down and stay in the Navy, but you also definitely benefited the ARC, too.
Well, keep in mind that I did find a 30-something who runs 10 miles every morning at O'Dark 30, and he runs for the ARC now once a year, the Brooksie Way Half Marathon.
Very good.
Continues the tradition.
Well, I have a confession to make. I only found out about this tax guide last year when I was discussing with somebody, and I don't know how it came up. I can't remember who it was, but we get home help dollars from Health and Human Services, and I didn't know that that was non-taxable because all the reporting looks like it was reported as income, which it was. Somebody pointed out the ARC guide. I read it and refiled for the previous 3 years and saved nearly an extra $4,000 in refunds came back my way. So right away, I thought more people need to know about this. I can't believe I was the only one that didn't know, let's put it that way. So I'm really thankful to have you on the podcast today to kind of go through this. I also want to mention that we will be posting the PowerPoint that you are basing this presentation off of. And that will be on our Facebook and our website for people who want to go back and reference that. And also, we'll post a link for the ARC guide. This presentation, though very, very helpful, is not the entirety of what you have in the ARC tax guide. And I really hope that people will get that. And if they have someone that prepares their taxes, bring it along with. Because it's my impression is that many CPAs might not know about this. Am I wrong on that? Or?
No, I can guarantee you that's absolutely true. And looking at 33 pages, oh my God, I gotta read all that. No, the CPA just needs to go to one or two pages.
Right.
And deal with the individual family need. But it's a good guide. It's a real succinct, to the point, here's what you need to know.
Yes, I agree. It's easy to read, but I wouldn't say that it's probably something that would hit the bestseller list for plots and everything.
Oh, I've made a fortune off it. I guarantee you.
Oh, you probably saved a fortune cumulatively for the people that read it. Also want to offer a bit of a disclaimer because you have one on your PowerPoint. The information contained in the 2021 income tax guide concerning your income tax and special deductions is not intended to be all-inclusive. The ARC of Michigan as publisher is not engaged in rendering any legal, accounting, or other professional services. And bring the tax guide with you to your appointment, like we just said, so that a knowledgeable tax consultant can use that to help prepare your return. And you'll be glad that you did. I wanted to start out by asking you, what were the highlights for this new edition of the tax guide for the year 2020?
Okay, Steve, I'll be glad to start those off. And okay. Please interrupt at any time because I tend to go on and on. The biggest highlight, and I hope everybody's attuned to this, 2020, the year of COVID.
Right.
Previous years, Congress would change the monkey with the tax laws and create all kinds of havoc. Two or three years ago that happened, and it took me three times as long to do this guide. But last year it was really just dealing with the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, or the CARES Act, and the implications of that. Other than that, there's been some numbers changes, cost of living increases, things along those lines. So it's really all the basic changes were the coronavirus aspects that Congress passed back in the spring. First off, of course, is stimulus payments. And I just wanted everybody to know that receipt of a 2020 COVID-19 stimulus payment, I know they're called something else, but the ones back in the spring and summer, the ones just at the end of December, and who knows, any day now, people will be getting another one. They are in no way, shape, or form income for supplemental security income benefits or count as resources or assets, even towards Social Security disability for those who are usually a little bit older. They also don't count towards Medicaid as income or assets, or even the food stamp program. And I didn't put in there, I should have, Section 8 rent subsidies as well. Even with SSI, you're allowed to keep it for 12 months and spend it down.
So what you're saying...
That was a big one right there, the stimulus payments for 2020.
So if someone, if a person with a disability is actually getting a stimulus payment, and that boosts their countable assets over $2,000, it doesn't make any difference in the short term.
Correct. 12 months they have, under SSI, have 12 months in which to spend it down. Make sure that the parent or guardian or rep payee or the individual keeps that piece of paper that usually comes after that check comes in the mail or direct deposit.
okay.
that indicates they did get a stimulus check.
My son's only income was RSDI off my retirement benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Is he required to file an income tax return?
The short answer is no. The long answer is, well, maybe. But with, like everything else, a person who receives retirement survivor's disability insurance, one of those, RSDI, as you mm-hmm. said, but in his case, Social Security Disability as a DAC, a disabled adult child, that payment is not taxable to him because an individual, a single person, has to have more than $25,000 a year in that sort of income to have any kind of calculation for income tax. I know that sounds kind of technical, but bottom line is he would have to have $25,000 or more before the calculations to make Social Security taxable come into play.
Okay, he's falling considerably short of that. Would there be any benefit to him filing, even though he has less?
No, he doesn't have to file a tax return if Social Security disability benefits is all he's getting. If he has work income, if he has wages that he's gotten through the year, then chances are he would have withholdings, both federal and state, and based on that kind of an income level, he could get those withholdings back.
Okay, in our case, that's not...
So yeah, you have to file a return in order to do that.
Right, right. And it's not the situation in our case. He does not have any employment income. I do know that last year, when the stimulus payments came out, the $1,200, it didn't take into consideration any children over the age of 18 or 19 that might be living at home with disability. They didn't get anything. And there was some talk going around at that time that if your son or daughter, if you file an income tax return for them and they're in the system, then they would get a $1,200 stimulus check. And I think that was kind of misinformation.
With the stimulus, in that situation, of course, Congress, they make a whole bunch of different rules.
Right.
So I'm trying to make it straightforward again, but minor children dependents had to be under age 17 in order to qualify as a dependent.
Okay.
Okay. People who are adults, and I'm not certain, how old is your son?
32.
Okay, yeah. He's well into adulthood. He should have gotten his own disability or his own stimulus payment, $1,200, because he should have gotten a paper check because he didn't file a tax return, so there was no direct deposit. He should have received one.
Well, maybe he's some of that millions that hasn't been delivered yet, but we never did get one.
Claim him? And I know this is a podcast, but the question is, I would ask you, you don't have to answer, but if you were to claim him as a dependent, then that could have been the reason.
We do.
But yeah. We can talk offline about why you declare him as a dependent and all that. He's 32. There's no reason for him to be your dependent for Social Security purposes or Medicare purposes or anything like that. If he has private health insurance, say through your employer or former employer, they require a dependent status. Well, okay, that's a good reason to keep him as a dependent. Give up one thing, you get another.
Yeah, he did have he did have insurance through my wife's employer before she retired last year or at the beginning of this year, and that did keep him covered under medical to be a dependent.
Right, and stimulus payments last year were going off. Let me say 2019 tax returns. Stimulus payments were one of the big thing items of 2020, and we've already talked about doing a tax return only if he has income that reaches certain levels. It doesn't sound like he does. But if you were to file a tax return for someone with a disabling condition, say an intellectual impairment, a surrogate can do that. That is, they have to fill out a form 2848, which is a power of attorney form. That way, you're filling it out for the individual, and you're letting IRS know that you're doing it for them. Keep in mind that the agent, which is you, filling it out, and the taxpayer could be liable for any penalties. So make sure you do it right.
Yep, because I was audited once by the IRS, and they have no sense of humor. They don't, and there's no mulligans. There's no mulligans whatsoever. It was painful.
Well, I have heard that they've become more mellow, but I don't believe it for a minute.
Nah, I don't either.
great, now I'm going to get audited. All right. Talking about exemptions and dependency, I always wanted people to know, especially this past year and the last 2 years, really, the two tax years, people usually associate a dependent status with an exemption. Well, that was done away with 3 years ago and will be for the next 5 years. A personal exemption is a certain amount of money each year that you can write off your taxes. But 3 years ago, the tax laws changed to where the standard deduction for an individual or a married couple went way, way up. So you don't get the personal exemptions anymore for your dependent, except in Michigan. The Michigan legislature had to go back and change that when the federal law changed. You still get personal and dependent exemptions on your Michigan tax return. And there's also, as part of my guide here, if you have a dependent adult child or minor child, you get an extra exemption called a totally and permanently disabled exemption. And the definition of what that is essentially Social Security's definition. So if he's getting Social Security disability, he is by definition totally and permanently disabled. So you get two state of Michigan exemptions for your son. It's on the front page of the Michigan 1040. It's been around over many, many years.
Yeah, last year was the first year I could not itemize.
Oh, me too. I'll go ahead and admit it. I haven't itemized for two tax years now because the standard deduction went way up. And because I'm 66 years old, as you well know, you get an extra, I think it's $1,300 for every year for being above age 65.
Don't worry about it, Tom. I'd rather give my age away, but I can't actually. I'm stuck with it.
Yes, sir. Me too. Yeah. Personal exemptions, Michigan only. That's a biggie. A lot of parents, you know, call me about stuff like that too. But I also put in my guide about the mileage rules.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think, why would that go in this kind of a guide? Well, a lot of parents take their sons or daughters, children, to hospitals, and there's medical mileage that's available. A lot of people volunteer their time for nonprofit charities. There's volunteer mileage available as deductions off their taxes. Yes, you have to itemize. I get it. And there's, of course, the standard business mileage deduction, and I list those all out in my tax guide as well. But just keep in mind, they're volunteer. You volunteer for the Arc of Oakland County, and if you feel so inclined, you can charge off 14 cents a mile for doing the work on behalf of the ARC.
I do know that when we were able to itemize, we took advantage of that quite a bit for the medical mileage for my son, because parents are the Uber drivers for our kids. Well, they've got to get around. There's different things that are necessary, doctors, hospitals, tests, therapies, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. You're living in Northern Oakland County and you've got to go downtown Detroit Children's Hospital or U of M Hospital or even Beaumont. I mean, that's a lot of miles, many times a week.
Charitable contributions. There's some new things there. One new tax deduction for $300, and there's also one that's been around for a long time being renewed that has been made permanent now, I guess. That the longstanding provision allows a donor to make a certain charitable gift from a traditional IRA if they're over 70 and a half, so it doesn't apply to all of us, but some, perhaps.
Yeah, both of those are true. The first one, it's brand new with the 2020 tax return, and it's part of the CARES Act, of course. You know, don't get overly enthusiastic about this, but it's a $300 above-the-line deduction. On the first page of your tax form, it's above the last line, meaning that you don't have to itemize to take a $300 charitable contribution deduction. It's better than a poke in the eye with a stick. So that's new for 2020. The other one is been long standing, but it's where people who are over 70 and a half years old can make, they're required, now it's 72 years old, but you're required to take a required minimum deduction. And instead of, I mean, you can take it out, but you're going to have to pay income taxes on that according to your level. But if you take that money and gift it to a nonprofit charity, there is no income tax on it. And the charity, of course, benefit.
Right. And they've been renewing that year by year by year, but now it looks like they made it permanent, which makes sense.
Yes. Yes. Every year I had to make sure that they redid it. It has been for many years. It's a good thing. It really is a good thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to say I get them all the time, but I think we've had two or three in the past couple of years, two or three generous individuals do that.
On your PowerPoint, you had mentioned the SSI recipient in Michigan is receiving the benefit at the share independent level, a total of $808, which I take is the $794 plus $14 comes from the state.
Correct.
And is paying his or her pro rata share of the household expenses. Now, would that roughly translate to they're paying mom and dad rent?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. We don't have a separate refrigerator and utilities for them. They live in the household. So it's a pro rata share of expenses.
If you did, yeah, it's pro rata. Well, that's one way. Really, this is the SSI law we're talking about, not IRS. So with SSI, it pays according to living situation of the individual with special needs. So if the individual is living at home with mom and mom and dad are giving the individual food and shelter like they always did when they were children, then the SSI rate goes to $529 and some odd cents, one-third reduction. And if the individual is living with mom and dad and is paying either his pro rata or fair share of the monthly household expenses, and there are nine of those expenses that SSI uses, if they're able to pay their share of those expenses, their equal share, then that's not taxable. But a lot of people, parents still have a big mortgage and all that. You do the math, and there's no way they can pay that equal share because it's just too high. It's more than what their SSI comes in. So they have to use the room and board or rent rate, the independent rate of SSI. Well, to get the $794, the full amount, they have to show that they pay rent. I always suggest to parents that in Oakland County, use the figure of $600, $300 for rent each month and $300 for food. The rent portion is income taxable. So $300 times 12, $3,600 a year gets added to the parents, quote unquote, landlords under other income. That's how that would work. The reason you want to do that, either the pro rata share or charging the rent, is because that's what qualifies the individual to get the highest or maximum amount of SSI, which is $794 federal, you said earlier, and $14 a month from the state.
Now, what I had not heard before is that any portion of that would be taxable to the parents.
Well, it is. It's rental income. It's just like if I become your star boarder and I'm paying you rent, that's income to you. It doesn't matter that it's a child.
Would it be better than to have a written agreement as to what the amount of money is you're collecting?
Yes, and I put together a very simple, I call it a lease, but it's two or three sentence paragraphs. It's not big fancy at all, but it's something that I give to parents to use with the SSI application to, on paper, indicate the obligation of the individual to pay room and board to their parents, the landlords. And I cite the SSI rule and all that, and everybody signs it. So something just simple and straightforward as that is what you use to justify what's going on. But as parents, if you're the landlord, you need to be taking that room and board from your child each month. Whatever you do with that money is nobody's going to ask you.
Yeah, I've had some parents get really squeamish about charging room and board because they feel they shouldn't be doing that. And my recommendation was, well, then take that money and put it into an ABLE account for your son or daughter.
That's a possibility as well. I mean, you don't have to charge the room and board, but I'm saying charge the room and board or pro rata share or fair share. Let me just explain that maybe in some easier terms to understand. Think of pro rata share as three individuals going to college up in East Lansing, Michigan State, go green.
Yeah.
They decide not to live in the dorm. They live in an apartment, and each one of them is unrelated, and they all share one-third of the expenses. Well, the other two people's share into that pot of money is not income to me and vice versa. That's how it is with a parent to a child. Got to get over that familial hump, so to speak.
And we've already talked about, I think, the next slide you had, which was on slide number 11.
Right, we did. Possibility.
That's where you see,
independence.
Well, kind of discuss, it said SSI recipients in Michigan receive federal plus state benefits at the level of $808. Cannot be claimed as a dependent for income tax purposes. The dependent is specific to itemizing as opposed to exemptions, correct?
Well, in this case, what we're talking about is the SSI rules. And at this time, you know, this point, it's in conflict with the IRS rules. And the IRS says, as long as you pay more than 50% of somebody's upkeep every year, you can claim them as a dependent. But the SSI rules say if you are going to get the maximum amount of SSI, 790, for federal, $14 from the state of Michigan, then you are independent. Nobody is giving you food and shelter. Therefore, if they're not giving you food and shelter, they're not your dependent for income tax purposes.
And you know, Tom, I understand the logic behind it, but it's absurd to think that somebody could actually live independently with $795 a month or $808.
Well, use the word independent. That's just what it's called under SSI. Yes, the federal government thinks that on the SSI, $794 is enough to live on each month. Well, we know it's not, but an individual who's getting SSI, again, is by definition poor. They're eligible for food stamps. They're typically, people I deal with are getting services through community mental health. If they're living in a group home or an apartment or a personal residence home with a couple other people, you know, those are Medicaid dollars flowing differently. $808 a month, you can do it.
You're absolutely
not going to live in Bloomfield Hills in the fanciest apartment. You know, you can still do that when you put your money together with other people and live together.
And my next question was, and I probably had it answered there, does this dependent rule apply to individuals receiving SSDI or RSDI benefits?
No, and that's a great point, because SSI, keep in mind, is a needs-based program. It is not Supplemental Security Income. SSI is a needs-based program. It's a poverty benefit. It's not a Social Security benefit. Oddly enough, it's operated through the Social Security Administration, but it's not a Social Security benefit. RSDI, or Social Security Disability, is a Social Security benefit. It is an entitlement, not a congressional appropriation every year like SSI is. So if you're, in your case, your son's only getting SSDI, you can claim him as a dependent because you're paying more than 50%. There's no SSDI rule that requires somebody to be paying room and board or anything like that. Different set of rules.
Just to make it more confusing, I think.
Of course. Yeah. It's the government. Come
right.
on.
Okay.
We can move on to adult home help or chore services.
Yes. The non-taxability of adult home help. That's, again, what first introduced me to the guide here, which was very beneficial. And can you kind of explain how that works and how people might be able to go back 3 years and get a little extra bonus, a little extra stimulus payment, so to speak?
Well, the previous history on this, because I was intimately involved with it in the late 1980s, believe it or not, early 90s, IRS, the tax court, ruled and said that adult home help services, which back then was called chore services, this money that the state of Michigan pays to the parent caregiver for the chores they have to do on behalf of their son or daughter, the IRS ruled back in, you know, right around 1990 that it was taxable income to the parent, the tax court. So we were stuck. But legislation, advocacy, whatever you want to call it, it took a long time. But in 2014, January 1st, 2014, the IRS amended through an IRS notice 2014-7, very famous one in our circles, but the IRS notice said, nope, we're not going to make home help services taxable anymore to live-in caregivers. Usually that's the parent. Now, I'm paraphrasing and using my own words,
sure,
but there are much more technical language for this. But the IRS notice 2014-7 suddenly said, okay, it's not taxable anymore, but you do have to account for it. The state of Michigan, and that's what I'm going to concentrate on, sends a 1099 each year, or a W-2. No, you're not a state employee. There's an asterisk there. But you get a 1099 sent by the state of Michigan to you. They also send it to the IRS. The IRS doesn't know you're on adult home help. So on your tax form, the 1040, you're getting adult home help services on line one. You enter, or add two, to the wages, salaries, and tips. Okay? But on Schedule 1, which is a separate form than the 1040, line 8, under other income, you take it out with a minus sign and put in the dotted line right in there, notice 2014-7.
Now, that might sound complicated, but it was extremely easy, and even to file amended forms, this was not hard whatsoever.
Yeah, I think even TurboTax now and others like it now account for that sort of thing, but it was kind of difficult in the very beginning because you couldn't hand write an electronic thing that noticed 2014-7.
I did. I always file electronically, but I had to send the paper app in order to amend them. And for the current year also, last year, I don't think they had that on TurboTax. But again, it might sound like a hassle, but believe me, it paid very, very well.
Great. I'm glad to hear it. I'd love to hear it when you told me the first time. Keep in mind on those amended returns, especially it's an amended return form, and you can go back 3 years with the federal return, and you can go back 4 years for a Michigan return. And you got to kind of do it before April 15th, you know, the final filing date of each year, and you count back the number of years there.
And I received money from state and federal, so it was really worth my time, I can tell you that. Non-taxability of the family support subsidy.
Family support subsidy, to those who may not know, is a payment that families with gross incomes under $60,000 taxable in Michigan. By the way, that hasn't changed since State Representative Stabenow.
Oh, really?
In the late 80s, It's always been $60,000 or less taxable state. It's a payment to the families of that income level with a child who is in special education, and the label is severely mentally impaired, severely multiply impaired, or autistic spectrum disorder, ASD. No other categories apply there. But it's $229.31 a month. Okay. Again, more than a poke in the eye with a stick, but it's good. And that money is not taxable. The family support subsidy money is not taxable income.
Is there anything that they have to make notification on that? If are they getting a W-2 for the family support?
No, they're not getting a W-2 with that to begin with.
So that doesn't show up on the federal? Okay, that's...
You know, the tax returns are the honor system, and if you're making money, say, independently, you still have to the IRS how much you're making and take your withholdings and all that sort of thing. Well, family support subsidy is codified within the Michigan Mental Health Code, so it's there. It's been there a long, long time. So $229.31 times 12. It's also for only under children under 18 in those family situations. Once that child turns 18, then they become an economic family of one, and suddenly parents' income and assets no longer matter. And then they're eligible for the SSI and the Medicaid.
And then you also, as the last thing here, put down the ABLE Act as a deduction. And that is relatively new, but still getting talked about quite a bit. And many people are still unfamiliar with it.
Achieving a Better Life Experience, the ABLE Act, a federal law, 215, but over 5 years ago, federal finally passed that. And then the state of Michigan took about a year and a half to pass it. But in Michigan, and even though you live in Michigan, you can have an ABLE Act account in another state. There are a few states that don't allow you to have one from their state unless you're a resident. You can only have one account. You can't have 50 ABLE Act accounts. If you choose to go with the Michigan ABLE Act savings account, and you make someone makes a contribution to the person's account, say you're the parent, you're the grandfather or grandmother, and you want to make... You can make a $10,000 contribution to your grandson with the ABLE Act account, and you can get a deduction on that.
Super.
So it's up to $10,000 for those filing jointly, or $5,000 for a single filer. So you're a single person, you want to put $5,000 in your nephew's account, you can do that. Take a state of Michigan tax deduction. Yeah, one of the other positives about an ABLE Act savings account is that it's all after-tax dollars going in. The individual with special needs, and there's a debit card that you can get with that ABLE Act account. Anything they spend from that ABLE Act account is not, that distribution, that spending, is not income taxable to the individual, no matter how that money came to them.
It's a very useful tool.
Yeah, the biggest negative that I always want people to make sure they understand is that whatever's left in that ABLE Act account, once the individual with special needs dies, state of Michigan has first dibs on whatever's in that account.
Not the main...
Whatever Medicaid is paid out during that individual's lifetime. Essentially, it's going to be all of it.
Right. It's not the main treasure chest. That would be the third-party trust. But this is still a necessary tool, and it can be very, very handy in many circumstances. Tom, that's the end of your presentation, but if you have anything else to add, now please do.
Well, again, I'll put a plug in there. My tax guide is free.
Yep.
It is on the Arc of Oakland, www.thearcoakland.org. It's on our local chapter website.
Okay.
It's also on the state of Michigan, or our state office website as well. That's www.arcmi.org, arcmichigan.org. And it's there. And there's a lot more than what we've talked about, more detail-y kind of things that your CPA and tax person would want to look
definitely,
at.
Definitely. It's not the stuff you'd want to read through, but it's a great resource to hand to your CPA or whoever's doing your taxes.
At the end, I just want to make sure that I give a shout out to my nephew, Philip Partika. He's a CPA in training
okay.
with his dad, my brother-in-law, and Phil painstakingly looks over my text for the last 3 years anyway. Pointed out a couple of things. Hey, Uncle Tom, you forgot this. So I want to give him a shout out. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I thank you and also thank them for helping you produce this because it's extremely beneficial and you can't beat free. Tom, I understand you said you're retiring this coming year, at the end of the year?
Yes, June 30th, 2021, almost a couple months short of 39 years here at the ARC. It's time to move on and get somebody younger in here. And somebody has been identified, and any day now that individual will be signing a contract, and then we'll have a transition, and I'll go off into the sunset, and the ARC will move on stronger than ever.
I don't think you're exactly going to go off into the sunset. I'm sure you'll find something very useful and helpful to do. And I think that they probably realize that you're number one volunteer.
Yeah, I'll keep my hand in a lot of things and continue to be a thorn in my side, in the sides of my grandchildren.
Yeah, I had that bumper sticker. I want to live long enough to be a burden to my children. Yep. Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Okay, take care now.
Thanks for tuning in to Disability and Me, Let's Talk About Taxes with the ARC of Michigan. I'm Alex, producer of Unlocky, here to thank you all for listening and to remind you to help support our podcast by sharing, subscribing, and sustaining as you can. We'd also like your help finding new topics and ideas to investigate. This very episode comes from a listener suggestion. Just send an email to contact@nlocky.com or reach out to us on Facebook, and we will get to work finding experts to answer your questions. Our current season will be coming to an end around the first weeks of May, and then we will be going into a brief hiatus to prepare the next season's episodes for you, returning in August with more tips on navigating life as we know it. Thank you for your time, and have a wonderful listening experience.
Hi, this is Carrie. I manage the Unlocky Chat Cafe and co-host this podcast. Steve is here now to wrap up the major points of the interview with Tom Konjorski. Steve, you want to get us started?
No, I think you're doing great. Just keep going.
One of the things that I noticed right away was Tom comes to this with a great deal of experience, and he's been doing this for quite some time. I also really appreciate how he explains the answers in very clear and a very concise manner. He makes it all very relatable.
You know, when I get down to reading tax instructions, it's almost like I'm reading some kind of foreign language. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the intimidation. I don't like reading about taxes or
stress,
how to do them.
Stress goes up when you even think about
getting
to do this, and you're gathering the stuff you need, and it's just like,
I've been known to read the same thing three times and not understand what's going on. But Tom does make it very concise, and he tells you it's almost like Tax Guide for Dummies or something, at least I feel, because I could understand what he was saying.
Well, he certainly is a great interpreter.
Yeah, well, 28 years of experience will do that for you, I guess.
Right, right.
I thought his conversation about the COVID-related income and ineligibility requirements was great. I had not given it a great deal of thought about the because Liam didn't get a COVID. I mean, he didn't get a stimulus check last time. So his bank account didn't swell up, but I understand he will be getting one this time. And if he goes over the $2,000 limit, it's not a big deal. But just keep the paperwork that says that he received one in case you ever get called on question as to why he was higher than that level.
Excellent advice.
And if you can't spend $1,400, if you can't spend that in 12 months, we need to talk. We can find ways to spend that money. I think it was the best explanation I've heard yet about charging rent for your child with a disability and explain how there's the there's a method to do that by sharing expenses and telling all that up or having a fixed rate, which is something we talked about with Hillary Heck and their interview on Social Security. she did a very good job of explaining how that works too. But from a tax point of view, Ken did a great job here.
What I liked is that with his explanation about the different charging of rents, he offers options depending on the situation that you'll be most comfortable with regarding your child. It takes a village to raise a child, and it takes a small team of dedicated staff to produce a single podcast episode. This is the part of the show where we get to thank them. First of all, I want to thank my co-host and stud muffin, my husband, Steve.
Oh, thank you.
And I did it without laughing.
Okay. And I want to thank my talented and lovely bride, Carrie.
Thank you. Next, we want to thank Alex, our compassionate taskmaster, and the producer who is constantly coming up with new technology tricks to teach an old dog. Oh, did I say that out loud?
At least he doesn't use a shock collar. I'm grateful for that. Next, we want to thank Holly, Alex's co-conspirator and a sister, our podcast's artistic director, website designer, and the mother of our oldest granddaughter who just had her 17th birthday last week.
Happy birthday, Abby.
Hey, happy birthday.
Last but not least, we want to thank Danny, our intern. She has a number of backstage responsibilities, and we really appreciate her contributions in making this podcast work. Also, for you, our listeners, until next time, this is Carrie
and Steve
signing off.
Thanks for listening.